read the role.
DiBella?
Yes.
Here. Saddle?
Here.
Avedisian?
Here.
Buell?
Here.
Bush?
Here.
Curry?
Here.
Drake?
Here.
Gardeau?
Here.
Healy? Hoffman?
Here.
Hoheb? Holloway?
Here.
Yono?
Here.
Cambly? LaChance?
Here.
LeBeau?
Here.
Lester?
Here.
Lewis? Magnin?
Here.
Maniscalco? Mandyke?
Here.
Murata? Hain?
Here.
Patel?
Here.
Potoski? Bellemi?
Here.
Sweezy?
Yeah.
Taylor?
Here.
Torres?
Here.
Vecino?
Here.
Wolf?
Here.
Carrier? We have a quorum, Mr. Chairman.
Item number 3, approval of the meeting minutes of March the 1st, 2021. Is there a motion to adopt?
So moved. The motion.
Moved in. The motion has been moved to adopt. Are there any additions or deletions to the minutes of the 21st? I'm sorry, of March 1st.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, this is John Myrtle. There was also a subsequent board meeting on March 11th. So those were distributed to the commissioners. If somebody could move to approve those minutes as well.
So moved the 11th also, Sweezy.
Without objection, we'll take up both in the same vote. Any changes, any relative to the second order of minutes? If not, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. Public comments relative to agenda items.
Mr. Chairman, this is Dave Silverstone, if I may.
Yes, sir. David, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Briefly on agenda item 10D, as in David, that regards the accounting procedures. That's been before the Finance Committee several times where I made extensive comments or substantial comments. I note that the documents are still silent on the when it's laying out the sources of revenues. It's remained silent on the customer sewer service charge. This raises about $7 million a year, and I think it ought to be part of the procedures. Secondly, it's also silent on the clean water project charge. So when that document discusses the proposed development of water rates, the development of the ad valorem, identifies the source of revenues and expenditures available to the MDC, I think the clean water project charge ought to be included. So I would suggest those two changes to the to item 10D, the accounting procedures. Mr. Chairman, with regard to item 8, the response to something I said, I am not quite, I've reviewed the materials that have been supplied me, and they're rather voluminous. I'm not quite sure what the subject is or what may require a response, and I'd appreciate it if I could reserve my remarks with regard to number 8 until after the presentation of whatever is going to be presented, if that's okay with you.
It's okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's all I have.
Further public comments? If not, item five, report from the district chairman. I'm going to ask to defer this. We've got a rather long agenda, but I'll cover my concerns in other business in item number 16. Report from the chief executive officer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman Scott Jellison. I will also defer my report, given the length of the presentation, for item number 8.
Where are you proposing to defer to?
Mr. Chairman, I'm just going to defer my report for this month, unless there's any question.
You're talking on item 8. Scott, I don't know whether I can't hear you.
Yeah, I'm referring my report, Mr. Chairman,
okay.
And in the anticipation of a long meeting. So if there's any questions commissioners might have, I'd be more than happy to try and answer them.
Okay. Report from the district council. Chris, you're muted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You all thought that was the end of my report, but unfortunately, I have a few things I want to add.
There was a
yeah, there was a clapping in the background, I think. We had a potential resolution of a workers' comp claim, which we're recouping $300,000 in medical indemnity payments, as well as the value of future medical from a third-party tortfeasor. We're putting together the settlement documents, and I'll be able to report more fully to the board at the May meeting. We've resolved two contract disputes with a contractor for a total value of $325,000 payable to the district. The 777 Main Street case is now final, no further appeals. The Glastonbury class action is wrapping up. I give it another 30 days before it's finally over. Payments will continue to be made and credits given, but our administrative work would be done. We have mediation tomorrow on the Lindbrook sewer collapse. That starts tomorrow with Judge Spector of the federal court. Your chairman has signed two requests for funding from the federal government for funding of water and sewer infrastructure. We're preparing a request with our congressional offices for the deauthorization of the Culver project, which is just one more avenue that we can use to confirm our termination of that project. On the deep landfill, waiting decision from the Supreme Court on our declaratory judgment action. We continue to communicate with legislators on that issue. And we just found out today that HB 6506, which was a bill that I forwarded to each of you, which provided for a streamlined process through the claims commissioner, has been held by that committee. It was not voted on today because of concerns expressed by the AG. And then finally, the Senate Bill 966, as you all know, was not reported out of the Planning and Development Committee, but it may raise its head at some point in the future by way of amendments, so we keep track and keep an eye on that. That's my report. Mr. Chairman, any questions I'd be more than happy to answer. I'll also have comments on item number 8 on the agenda.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Ray Sweezy, question to Chris Stone. The workman's comp claim, that has to go to PP&I first before you bring it to the full board. That's the way we've done it for years and years.
Well,
any workman's.
I have no problem. It's a settlement that we're getting money. We're getting paid. Our total value of our claim is $301,000, and we're getting paid $300,000 from the insurance company representing the third party tortfeasor, the entity that caused the injury to our employee. So I don't mind bringing it to people.
No, that's different. That's different.
It was really just a report. Really just
it cost us money.
Yeah. No. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry, Commissioner. I should have been clearer.
Commissioner Taylor, do you want this referred to the committee?
No. This is not a matter where we're required to make a payment from our funds.
Okay.
This is a reimbursement, so that can come to the board.
Mr. Chairman, if I may?
Yeah.
There is another, this is Chris Stone for the record. There is another workers' comp case claim that will require a payment from the NBC of a very modest sum, but we will be, it exceeds $5,000, so we will be taking that to PPI first and then ultimately to the board, probably not until June.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Further questions of the council?
Commissioner Curry?
Commissioner Curry, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I hope everybody had a nice Easter. My question is to Chris Stone. Now that it's not coming to PP&I, how will the board be informed that the money's been received, and where will that money be going?
Well, first of all, I'll be reporting when the money comes in. So that's we expect that before the May meeting. It just hasn't come in yet. And secondly, as to where the money goes, we're self-insured under workers' comp, so it goes into our reserves or our I think we, correct me if I'm wrong, Scott, that gets paid out of internal service accounts, so we'll be put into that.
Thank you.
Right.
Okay. That's it, Chris?
That's it, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
And you had remarks on.
Yeah, I just have a brief. I can do it now, Mr. Chairman, if you'd like. I know this is on the agenda. It's an important item on the agenda. It's number one in terms of the substantive work before the board tonight. And I just wanted to make a few observations, if I might. First of all, the NDC, as everyone knows, supported legislation that created the independent consumer advocate. We agreed to fund it, and we even increased the compensation to reflect additional work on the integrated plan. Since the independent counsel has started, he has made several positive contributions and suggestions to the district, many of which we have adopted, and you'll hear about those this evening. On the contrary, there have been some instances where we have not agreed with his recommendations, and as you all know, one of the most notable ones is his unconditional support for a 30-year bond terms. More recently, the ICA appeared as a panelist on a webinar entitled Financing Sustainable Water in Connecticut. We were not asked to participate on the panel. You'll see tonight several instances where the consumer advocate puts forth positions on various topics, which, left without a response, constitute the only public record on those positions, which I find, quite frankly, on the whole, to be unsupported by facts, in many cases based solely on anecdotal references, and in one glaring instance, one might consider to be insulting, not only to the members of this commission, but also to the public he serves. That being said, the consumer advocate has every right to express his opinions, and he is encouraged to continue to do so. However, the NDC should and must respond in kind. We owe it to our customers, our towns, and our governmental partners to set the record straight, particularly with all that we have before us, approving an integrated plan, at least one additional referendum on the Clean Water Project, improving our relationship with DEEP, and annual budget challenges, to list a few. Our response, which we'll hear tonight, is offered without any ill will towards the advocate, and we have shared our presentation with him in the interest of full disclosure and transparency. I consider the presentation you're going to hear tonight to be not only necessary, but also constructive, and I hope the consumer advocate agrees. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Stone. Okay, item number eight, discussion, response to independent consumer advocate. Who in the staff will
I'll just introduce the topic and then the speakers who will be talking. Just to add to Chris Stone's comments, for the commissioners who have not, as most of you know, we have sent all of the documentation, including the videos, out to all of our council members, commissioners, including the and just to frame.
Scott, you're having a problem. You're having a problem with your transmission. At least I am. Is everybody else having a problem hearing?
We have problems.
Yes.
Go ahead. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. So what we're going to talk about today or tonight is a discussion. It was basically a two-day seminar, March 16th and 17th. And really, this webinar is a good seminar, a webinar in terms of its original intent. It was really to talk really more about the regulated water utility and how including non-regulated water utilities, and how you can possibly adjust and anticipate revenue streams and rate structures based on conservation, whether it's through people buying efficient toilets, whether it's through CIP bonded projects to reduce leakage, or whether it's simply through raising rates to force conservation in general. It also talks, was talking about drought triggers and all good things. So it's a positive webinar by really the water plant. I don't know who's got their mic on, but the Water Planning Council. It was funded by Connecticut Water, which is a private utility, and the intent was really to talk about water rates in general and how you can possibly increase or address your rate structure based on drought triggers and conservation. Specifically, there's a Public Act 13-78, which is really the heart of this discussion, and I've got John Myrtle, who's going to explain that and what it means in regards to the seminar. The seminar was 2 days, basically 4 hours a day, and the second day there was a panel discussion, and it included Mr. Silverstone and others, and we'll talk about that once we look at the videos. The MDC was not invited to participate in this panel discussion. For reasons I'm not aware of why, but we can discuss that further. But if we're going to basically show clips of Mr. Silverstone's statements during this second day panel, which, as Chris Stone mentioned, are concerned to us, and we believe that the commissioner should be aware of those comments. We're also going to show the videos, and then we're going to have staff respond to those comments Mr. Silverstone has. So first, if I could just have John Myrtle talk about this Public Act 13-78 and how it relates to this topic about conservation rate increases based on conservation.
Chairman DiBella, this is Ray Sweezy. Before John starts, could I ask a question maybe to Scott or Dave Silverstone? Why were we not invited to this? I watched it this afternoon. The regional was there. Connecticut Water, I guess, sponsored it. The town of Portland, which has their own water. Dave Silverstone was there. Why was the MDC, the largest water company, sewer in the state of Connecticut, not there?
Commissioner, if I may,
if
we can just hold the questions until
okay, it's a long, fine. I'll ask it later.
That's a good question. I don't know, but I will try to answer that. But if John can start, and then if you can hold your question, it'd be appreciated.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Scott. John Myrtle here. As Scott described, the webinar related to water utility rate setting with a focus on sustainability and conservation. Scott described Public Act 13-78. I'm just going to jump back a little bit before that. In 2007, the General Assembly passed Public Act 07-139, which created the Water Infrastructure and Conservation Adjustment, known as WICA, for private water companies. And what WICA does is it allows private water utilities, water companies, to add a WICA surcharge to customer bills to recover for costs of quote-unquote eligible projects that occurred in between rate cases before PURA. An eligible project basically means renewal or replacement of existing infrastructure, that are worn out, getting near the end of their useful life, or will contribute to reducing unaccounted for water. Also allowed for main cleaning, relining projects, and leak detection. So basically, this gave the private water companies the capability to add a surcharge onto their rates in between rate cases. That was in 2007. In 2013, the legislature passed Public Act 13-78, and this expanded the concept of WICA and created a revenue adjustment mechanism that allows for private water companies to collect their total authorized revenues, PURA authorized revenues, from their water customers, regardless of the amount of customers' usage. So it expanded the WICA concept to basically allow the companies to collect their approved revenues regardless of how much water was consumed by their customers. If during a year the water company collects less revenue due to water conservation, then PURA would have approved the adjustment mechanism, which allows them to add on WICA surcharge for that purpose as well. The other piece of Public Act 13-78 was that it removed the requirement that municipal water utilities submit an annual report to PURA on a form created by PURA. Up until that time, the MDC, just like every other municipal utility, had submitted this form on an annual basis. Despite the removal of this annual reporting, the MDC still is required to submit significant annual reports, or even quarterly reports in some instances, to multiple offices of the state. Starting in 2011, Public Act 11-51 deemed the MDC to be a state agency for purposes of developing an affirmative action plan, and we are required to submit on an annual basis our affirmative action plan to the Department of Administrative Services and the Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities. We are the only municipal corporation, not just the only municipal water utility, which is required to submit this affirmative action plan to CHRO. Another act in 2013 was Public Act 13-257, which expanded the scope of statutes where the district was deemed to be a state agency to include the state set-aside program for contractors. The district is required to submit a quarterly report on its set-aside program goals and results to the Department of Administrative Services and the Commission on Human Rights and Opportunity. And then in 2014, Special Act 14-21 requires the district to submit an annual report to the governor, the auditors of public accounts, the Office of Fiscal Analysis, and the Legislative Program Review and Investigations Committee. This report appears to be much more this is the closest report to the prior report that's required to the PURA. But this report requires that we identify all bond issues from the previous year and include the financial advisors and underwriters, whether the issue was competitive, negotiated, or privately placed, and the issue's value. A list of all projects receiving financial assistance, including each project's purpose, location, and amount of funds provided by the district. We must include cumulative value of all bonds issued, value of outstanding bonds, and capital projects associated with such bonds. We must include an accounting showing all water revenue and expenditures by and an affirmative action policy statement, description of the composition of the district's workforce by race, sex, and occupation, and a description of the district's affirmative action efforts. Then further, Special Act 14-21 also requires the district to submit a copy of its audit to the Office of Fiscal Analysis. We must submit a personnel status report to the Office of Fiscal Analysis, and the personnel status report must include the total number of employees at the end of each quarter, the positions vacated and the positions filled during the quarter, and the positions estimated to be vacant and positions estimated to be filled at the end of each year. And the reason I'm describing these is, again, the Public Act 13-78, which gave the private water companies their ability to recover revenues regardless of customer usage, removed municipal utilities requirement to report to PURA, but there are extensive other acts that have been passed where the MDC provides that information, provides further information, and provides duplicative information across multiple of the reports. Thank you, Scott.
Scott? Thank you, John. I appreciate that. One of the things that we're going to, the first video we're going to see is, again, a snapshot of that workshop with Mr. Silverstone and other people within the industry. And the important part of this video, there's two videos back to back, and it's really talking about, as you know, we've been talking at length with Mr. Silverstone over the issue of 20-year versus 30-year bonds. And so I'm going to have Chris Martin, we're going to play the video, and then I'm going to have Chris Martin respond to the video. The video has Jack Bukowski at the top left, Rochelle Kowalski, who's the vice president of finance from Regional Water Authority, who actually is Regional Water Authority, Mr. Silverstone, the CEO there, Mr. Silverstone. And then at the bottom is left is Susan Springfield, and then Marianne Dickerson, and Senator Paul Formica. So with that, we're going to play the video, and I'll have Chris Martin respond to the video. Thank you.
Not communicating the hello.
Were people hearing the video?
No, we're not. I'm not.
All right, hold on 1 second. I just need to confirm, are people hearing the video?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, I'll start from the beginning.
This is Dave Silverstone. I can't hear the video.
Yeah, I'm not hearing it either. This is
who's not hearing the video?
The people on the phone are apparently not hearing the video.
Yeah, that's pretty. John, do they have the ability on the phone to hear the video?
I heard Dave Silverstone, and I think Commissioner Yano was on the phone. Speak up. Here, let me try something else. We had this working earlier. I'm not sure why it's not working.
It's working perfect on the iPad.
Yeah, on the iPad it's working. Yep. You're right, Ray.
Coming.
It's working well on the iPad.
Right. Are people seeing the PowerPoint, the clip of the video again? Seeing it?
Yes.
Right. Yes.
About to start it. Well, let me know if you cannot hear.
No, we can't hear it now.
No audio.
Okay. Well, seemingly the only way we can get it to play with audio, the people on the phone are unable to hear.
Okay. How many people do we have on the phone?
There's a decent amount.
John?
There are six.
How many commissioners is really the question?
There's six people that I'm not sure the RSC phone numbers, and I know there's a handful of commissioners on the phone, and Dave Silverstone is on the phone. So how do you want to proceed, Mr. Chairman?
Well,
these are very short videos, Mr. Yeah. Chairman, right? So
this is
the majority can listen to them. And
Chris?
And this is Chris Martin. I was going to make just a suggestion. I think the videos have been distributed for everybody to hear. I actually think that, we could talk, just summarize, I think the main point of what it was that Mr. Silverstone was saying, and then just kind of move on with what we wanted to say about it. That's my suggestion.
This is Scott Johnson. Why don't we play the video? People who can hear it will hear it. The people who, we sent an email to everyone with a link. They can go on the website and they can click on the website and see the video.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. Let's try to play it for the people that can listen to it, and then we can get into the discussion on the merits of what's being raised here.
Perfect.
Okay, I'm giving it up again. All right, well, I'm starting the video. If anyone in the WebEx cannot hear it outside the phones, please tell me. Okay, that's the first video.
Mr. Chairman, this is Chris
Stone. Could we talk on each one of these videos before we go to the next one? If we have questions, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, Chris Stone, District Counsel. If we're going to use these videos and they're going to be made part of the record, everyone should be able to hear them, including those people on phone, those people like myself, I'm on my computer and I didn't hear a word of it. I would suggest taking Chris Martin's approach.
You know what the video says. Chris, in your presentation, state what the representations from Mr. Silverstone are so that he knows what he, right now at this point, Mr. Silverstone has no idea what's on it, but for his recollection, what tape we're showing, and therefore has no ability to respond, which he has reserved the right to respond to towards the end of the meeting. So I would prefer to have Chris Martin paraphrase or state what Mr. Silverstone is suggesting or opining to, and that will be the record. And then we can incorporate the videotapes for the record, but make them available in our minutes so that everyone can hear what they say. We've got there's an FOI issue here that I just don't want it to be. I want to follow the rules. So, with that, Mr. Chairman, I strongly urge you to allow Chris Martin to talk about what was said and then give his response to each of them, each of the videos.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with the approach.
Mr. Chairman, you're
sounds reasonable.
I think based on what Chris said about FOI, and I think under the FOI rules, I think we have to. We cannot incorporate something that can't be heard by everybody. So I think we have to follow that advice.
Was everybody, Mr. Chairman, was everybody sent these videos today? Because I got the four of them and I listened to them this afternoon. I mean, they're short videos. So everybody did have the opportunity to have these.
Mr. Chairman, you're muted. But yes, the videos were distributed publicly and posted publicly last week.
This is Dave Silverstone. I received voluminous information. I did not receive any videos.
Mr. Silverstone, the videos were in the PowerPoint. They were embedded in the PowerPoint.
Okay, well, he hasn't heard them, so that doesn't resolve that issue. Chris Stone.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Comfortable with Chris Martin articulating that issue?
Yeah,
Mr. Silverstone can respond after in the second part of 8.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Chris Stone, District Counsel. I've listened to the videos, and I think it's the excerpts from the videos are relatively short and simple, and whoever the presenters are can restate for the record what Mr. Silverstone was referencing or stating at that panel discussion. But ultimately, in addition to what Commissioner LeBeau says, comes down to being fair to Mr. Silverstone. He hasn't listened to the tapes, and I believe him when he says that. And the only way for him to know what I was referring to in my statement, or what the presenters are going to be referring to in their statements, is to either hear the videos or get the summary of what was said from each of the presenters. So the short answer to your question, Mr. Chairman, is yes. Well, I'm okay with Chris Martin doing that.
Okay, and then obviously in this process in item number 8, Mr. Silverstone can respond and have a right of response to what is articulated by Chris Martin. Is there objection to that?
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Curry.
Mr. Chairman,
I have no problem with Attorney Silverstone responding to the questions, but I would prefer that these questions be submitted to him in writing, and he responds in writing, not at the meeting, that he can have his few minutes at the end of the meeting to say whatever it is he wants to say.
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Johnson. If we can just let our presentation finish before we get into a debate with Mr. Silverstone or instead of what wasn't said, otherwise we're never going to finish the meeting.
I agree. Go ahead, Chris. Chris Martin.
Thank you. This is Chris Martin. Mr. Chairman, in the context of Mr. Silverstone's comments regarding opportunities for unregulated utilities, he goes on to talk about one of his greatest failings was convincing the MDC to utilize 30-year debt instead of 20-year debt. And also further went on to say that he still to this day doesn't understand why we made that decision. And I guess from my standpoint, the conversations we had with the consumer advocate were, were rather, I think, in depth. And we had one meeting with him, with the folks from Sue Negrelli. And I also think we had people from CDM along with us. Rob Constable was in that meeting. And we talked about our debt plan for about an hour and a half at that time. We also, I think in preparation for the meeting on February 19th, we probably had between staff and our financial advisor and his staff probably 100 hours of, you know, time devoted to the analysis of the various forms of debt. And you will note that in your meeting materials, there's a memo from me to you that was provided on February 19th, which I think provides the broad context in which we structure our debt. And I tried to say all along here that to make this be a conversation about 20 versus 30 is really a gross oversimplification of what we do in terms of a process. And, you know, certainly we value, as we said earlier, we value Mr. Silverstone's input. And, you know, we often agree with him. But on this particular subject, we are guided by a number of things. One is a third of our debt is State of Connecticut Clean Water Fund loans. Those are 20-year loans. 30 years is not an option. 25 years is not an option. And we are... unlike regional water, for example, we have the $3 billion elephant in the room, which really drives a lot of our debt considerations. So, again, a third of our debt, we get grant and loan from the state of Connecticut, sometimes a 40% a grant, and the state has said they will not give us the grant without the loan. So we make decisions in a very broad context. That's one of the decisions, that we don't want to forego a 40% grant to issue debt on our own to amortize it over 30 years. So, and the other driver is major driver. There are others, but one of the other major drivers is the debt limitation statement, the debt limitation we have, which is basically 5% of the grand list of the member towns basically comprises our debt limit on an annual basis. So in terms of capacity, there's somewhere between $300 and $400 million, depending upon whose calculation, bond counsel's calculation differs from ours, but $300 to $400 million of excess capacity under that debt limitations cap. So there's a variety of considerations. We have the two financial advisors, one specific to the Clean Water Project, Bob Lamb, who's on the phone tonight with us. And then we have the rating agencies, Standard & Poor's and Moody's, who provide input to us in terms of how we structure our debt. We have policies on debt and capital assets, and we have to look at not just the average life of the wastewater treatment plant, but in these borrowings, there are also assets that have much shorter lives. So there's myriad considerations when structuring debt. I guess we were just disappointed that in a forum in which we had not been represented, the issue came down to a major failing of Mr. Silverstone's, was that the MDC had failed to amortize all its debt over 30 years. And I'll go back to also this year when we issued bonds, because interest rates were so low, we didn't extend the maturity on the bonds we issued in August to 25 years because the rates were so low. But again, you tell me how much and how quickly we have to take on $3 billion of debt, and then I can tell you with precision exactly how we would amortize it. But we don't make these decisions in a vacuum. And I guess the disappointment here is that in a public forum, this was kind of oversimplified. The decision about what we do and how we do it, and again, that's I think that's really just the point that very seriously.
Chris Martin, Scott Jellison, can you please talk about the second video and the comments from Rochelle Kalaus, who's the president of financial services for RWA, which is the same organization that Mr. Silver is the CEO of?
Scott, this is John Myrtle. Before we summarize it, why don't I play that video for the people that can hear it?
John.
Chris Stone already said we should not do that.
John, no, yeah, don't worry about the videos.
Okay.
John, don't worry about the videos.
Okay. All right. I misunderstood. Sorry.
That's all right.
So I guess the
Mr. Chairman, if Chris Martin is done, can I ask a question?
No, he's not done.
Oh, okay.
So I think what we wanted to talk about, Mr. Chairman, secondly, was the second video, which I think is basically a conversation between Mr. Silverstone and Rochelle, the VP of Finance from Regional Water Authority, in which they talk about the degree to which Regional Water Authority has been criticized by the rating agencies for being over-leveraged. And, you know, I think that's some of the comparisons to Regional Water are probably not appropriate because although we have a similar constitution, we are sewer and water, and we have, again, this clean water project that dwarfs really anything anybody else is doing along the Connecticut River or the Long Island Sound, for that matter. But to the extent that Regional Water's bond ratings are almost exactly the same as ours, and they're considered over-leveraged, and I think the conversation that we have with the rating agencies is really not that different. So I guess I think the comment there was simply that, you know, Regional Water's conversations with the rating agencies probably are not that different from ours. They are driven by a general bond resolution, which basically determines their flow of funds, as I understand it. That's kind of how the Clean Water Project works. So we have the same kinds of requirements in the indenture that we have in the Clean Water Project for additional bonds and bond coverage. And that's really, I think, I'm getting into a little bit of the next discussion about the Clean Water Project. But
Chris, can you focus on what Rochelle said about the fact that they do not borrow for 30-year bonds for that very reason you just described? Can you explain that?
Yeah, I think the point there, Scott, is that they also are trying to keep their debt manageable and to keep the rating agencies and their debt ratios in line with those requirements in their bond indenture. So it's really just the same. I believe it's the same kind of mathematics that we have to do when we're calculating our debt ratios too.
And I just want to make this point that what Rochelle says in the video is that RWA, Regional Water Authority, does not borrow for 30-year bonds for the very reason that Chris Martin just mentioned. That's the point. Thank you. The next video is really surrounding you know, a really disturbing and concerning statement that Mr. Silverstone continues to make, given the fact that Chris Martin mentioned 100 hours of practice time. I think he didn't mention, but approximately 8 meetings with Mr. Silverstone on the 20 to 30 year bond alone. And the fact that, you know, there's a continual discussion point about the fact that the MDC is not transparent, whether it's for a general purpose, whether it's for the clean water surcharge, whether it's for our rate structures and all those things. The next video was really, in general, talking about, I wish you could hear it, but it was basically, you know, the fact that the he doesn't believe that non-regulated water utilities and references the MDC, that we are transparent. And we're going to be talking about our transparency with specifically the Clean Water Project and the rate structure. And the first thing I would like to bring out on this topic is Mr. Silverstone in this video refers to the fact that, you know, there's only, if you saw the video, there's six people on the video. And he references, I believe, in this video that there's only the six people, and I'm not kidding when I say this. He quotes to say that only the six people on this video probably are aware of the clean water surcharge being on someone's bill. And I know that sounds crazy, but he said it, and I wish we could show it to you tonight. So with that, I'm just going to ask Julie McLaughlin from a communications group to talk about how we have developed the communication plan really since 2006 to present on identifying the clean water surcharge on a water bill. And Nick Salemi is going to talk in general about our overall plan in terms of communicating with the public and regulators as it relates to the clean water program. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Julie. Julie, you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me okay?
Excuse me. Can I ask, are we going to see this video or not?
No,
sorry, Julie. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but are we going to see the video?
No, because some of the people on the call, people on the phone cannot hear the video. So council has decided that for FOI reasons, we're just going to summarize the videos, and people can look at them at their leisure. As Mr. Myrtle mentioned, the videos were sent out Thursday afternoon, and some of the commissioners and the public have reviewed them, but in fairness to Mr. Stone and others, we're just going to summarize the videos at this point.
Well, I don't know. You know, we weren't invited to this meeting, so we didn't get to see that meeting, but so anyway.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Bush. Is there a low-tech way to have the audio stream if somebody called in from a cell phone and just held the speaker of their cell phone up as if they were speaking? It might be able to be broadcast to everybody. Is that possible?
John, you'd have to answer that question, John Myrtle.
I mean, we had the videos working earlier today. We just got a response from IP that WebEx doesn't allow the layered video audio to go out over the phone. I mean, if the chairman wants, I can hold up a cell phone to the computer and we can see if that works. Mr. Chairman, you're muted.
Okay, Chris Stone, what's your sense here? I don't think it's consistent with what we're trying to achieve here.
No, it's not. And I appreciate the attempt, certainly, and the fact is technology is not our friends right now. So, but in fairness to everybody, if it's going to be part of the meeting, it should be heard by and viewed by all participants, whether they be commissioners or members of the public. So, I think Chris Martin did an excellent job characterizing the statements that were made. He did his presentation accordingly. I think Julie McLaughlin has started down that road and can do that very effectively. Nick Salemi will do the same. And the panel that we're talking about was not subject to FOI. We are. So that's why it's a little different for them than it is for us.
Okay, Julie, can
Mr.
you
Mr. Chairman, this
please?
Is Rick Bush again.
Yeah, Rick, go ahead.
Sorry, but you know what might even be a more simple way is if somebody has that video on their phone, they could simply play the video on their phone and hold it like that. If that would be another low-tech way to be able to accomplish it, if you really wanted to get it to be available for everybody. That would be simple and I think effective.
I don't believe so. Chris Stone?
Well, you'd have to get everybody who's on the phone, except are on the call by phone, to try to do that. They will have to access it and be able to see the videotapes.
Excuse me, Nick Salemi. Chris, can I jump in here? You'd have to have the phone downloaded. The phone, all the videos would have to be on your phone. The files, even though they're short videos, are pretty large to be downloaded onto your phone. I don't think, and they're embedded in a PowerPoint. So to get that on your phone and play, it's not going to happen anytime quickly.
Okay, can we proceed?
Thanks,
as we articulated originally? Julie?
Mr. Chairman?
Who's that?
This is Boopin.
Oh, Boopin. Commissioner.
We are discussing this subject because somebody made some statement, and we are giving too much validity to those statements, in my opinion. We have discussed this subject in the past in very detail. Our finance people explain it very nicely. And unless they provide all this detail, we don't have to continue spending everybody's time debating something which is hypothetical. Somebody makes the statement. Mr. Silverstein has been nice about it, but many a times I observe that he makes a statement without quote-unquote proper research.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, can we let MDC move forward with whatever presentations you have?
Yeah, please. Julie, would you proceed with your presentation?
Sure. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. So in response to the issue of transparency or only six people knowing about the Clean Water Project and the charges that were going to be put on people's bills, I can tell you, because I've worked on the Clean Water Project since it began, that we did a significant amount of communication, education, and outreach, first to prepare for starting the Clean Water Project, gearing up for the first referendum. As you see, there's a little bit on the screen here. Some of the things we did, creating a citizens advisory committee, was one. They were representative of their towns and people who are interested in being involved and bringing information from their community to us and us back to their community. We, once the project began, we hired outreach groups so that they could be right in the community working with all of the homeowners and property owners about the work going on in their neighborhoods. It was incredibly successful. And in fact, it worked so well that we've now managed the project outreach not only for the Clean Water Project as it's continued, but we've done it district-wide now. So we do project outreach for all of our projects. After a successful first referendum in 2006, which clearly showed that information got out there, we had an overwhelming approval rate. We continued with the work for the next several years, communicating consistently through all of our member towns as we did our work in the project areas. And then in 2012, we geared up for the 2012 referendum. We used the Citizens Advisory Committee again, and they continued to be a significant part of our communication efforts throughout. And so since the second referendum in 2012, which was also overwhelmingly approved by the citizens in our member towns, we've continued to provide outreach information on the Clean Water Project and the Clean Water Project charge that shows up on people's bills. We've done it a number of ways. If you want to go to the next slide, John. So you may have seen these before. I presented this to the board previously. But for an example, in addition to all the other ways we do our outreach for the Clean Water Project, which included and still includes public outreach meetings, multiple bill inserts. We did newsletters, public access TV shows. Currently, you know, we're doing videos which provide information, which Nick will get into later. But once we knew that the Clean Water Project charge is going to be on everyone's bill, you'll see to the left image is, and for those of you who are on the phone and can't see it, what's on the screen is showing an original bill that went to our ratepayers for the water bill. And by the way, the Clean Water Project charge is only for customers who receive both water and sewer. So that was our old bill. We knew that more information needed to be clearer for customers on the bill. So in 2016, when we made our first change, so that we could include things like explanation of charges. In particular, at the time it was called the Special Sewer Service Charge. It's now called the Clean Water Project Charge. John, can you go back? There you go. So that information was there. All of this information, by the way, was also on our website and always has been and will continue to be. As things change, we keep it updated daily. You can go to the next slide, please. Now, what this is showing you is the most recent changes to our bill. This is the bill that we have now. It was effective January of 2020 after we did business transformation. We knew there were going to be a lot of changes for our customers, so we made sure to include things like the fact that their account number was going to be changing. We included a graph so they could compare their bills from month to month, which also is helpful when you're, as rates increase, you want to see how you can maybe save money or see how you're doing from month to month. That's a 13-month chart. We increased the ways people could pay and so on and so forth. Now, because there's only so much real estate on the bill, we did take off some of the, a lot of the copy that you saw on the previous bill that explained charges, but all of that is listed on our website. And on the second page that you see here, it does indicate that for an explanation of charges, that they can go to the website and find those there. One of the other things that we did on the second page was we broke out for clarification and, you know, an ease of information for our customers, the way the charges were broken down under the current charges column. So we broke it into your water charge, your sewer charge, and then also any federal and state mandated charges. And that's where you'll see the Clean Water Project, because it was a DEEP and EPA mandated project, as well as you'll see where we have like the DPH fee or other fees that are pass-through fees that we have to include in our bill.
Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, I'd just like Julie to make the point. We're responding to a comment that no one's aware of the Clean Water Surcharge on your water bill, which at this point, Julie's evolution that we're talking about, if everyone remembers, in 2008, the Clean Water Surcharge was only 35 cents. And it wasn't really until 2012 when it became $1.90, and then 2013, $2.50. And then really 2014 is when the Clean Water Surcharge exceeded the water rate. And all of these changes have been a direct result of commissioners' complaints, customers' complaints, and even Mr. Silverstone's complaints that the bill wasn't clarified enough. So the point of us being transparent is important to note that we heard the complaint from Mr. Silverstone, from our customers, from our commissioners, from our communities, and we've made significant changes along the way. Thank you, Julie.
You're welcome.
Are you finished, Julie?
Yep.
Okay. Nick?
Yep, all set. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yep, Nick Salemi.
Okay, sure. So continuing on with what both Scott and Julie said, I'm going to try to take a look at this from sort of like a case example of how we communicate, especially involving the Clean Water Project. Up here on the screen, you see quickly, just not going to get into it too much, but as Scott said, a couple of years ago, we had, constructive criticism, feedback from our customers, our commissioners, and our elected officials, specifically member town council members, about you guys do a lot of presentations. We see you out all the time. you're here, you talk, but it's too technical and it's too difficult for us to kind of like take. It's a lot at once, was, you know, in short, kind of like the summary that we got and the feedback we got. So we took that to heart a couple of years ago and said, look, you know, maybe the best way to get this apart out to everybody is with video. Video clips are short, they're easy to watch. If you keep it short and stick to a couple of points, it may be easier for everybody to understand. So about 2019-20, you know, we started with making the videos about like the basic functions of the MDC, you know, but common issues that, you know, the average customer had, whether it's the federal and state mandates for the Clean Water Project and really how the wastewater operations, you know, have affected the water bills in general. But, you know, so we kind of put together a campaign on getting these videos out, and that campaign received an award this year from the American Water Works Association, you know, which is basically the industry standard across the entire country. So it's a national award we received for these videos. But I guess I really want to point out that the award is not so much that you made videos. A lot of water companies make explainer videos. It's what did you do to, you know, what did you do with the videos? And it's really for the campaign used to get them out to our customers and the general public. So just move on to the next slide there, John. So I know some of you commissioners have seen them. Maybe a couple newer commissioners haven't got to see them since we've been having remote meetings and phone meetings because of COVID. But just briefly, you know, the topics were just the basics that some people didn't understand, that we are not just a water company, but we're also the sewer company. And that's really basic. But, you know, we started at ground zero and said, well, the video topics were water, wastewater, and your sewer system. Ad valorem, very confusing topic for some people that you don't understand. You pay for a portion of your sewer and your taxes. A real basic, why is my water bill increasing, right? And part of that answer is it's the sewer charges are on your water bill. So the video kind of zero it in on that. On top of it, there's just a basic, what is the Clean Water Project charge on my bill? And then a more like substantial, what is the integrated plan that we're sending to DEEP? Understanding your bill. Kind of Julie just laid out the bill and how it's broken down. So there's a video that literally walks you through the bill the same way we just did, to say this is what this charge is for and this is what that charge is for. Environmental stewardship, you know. So the common thread amongst all these videos is the Clean Water Project. It's either about the Clean Water Project or something that's affected by the Clean Water Project, which is the water rate. Understanding it with your wastewater, it's not just your ad valorem sewer bills. The Clean Water Project is an initiative that none of the other water companies on that webinar have to deal with. They're all only water companies. We are the only unique water and regional water and sewer authority that expands out to multiple towns and is large. So no one else has anything to do like this as far as, you know, compliance. So no one else has the kind of outreach they have to do to get this out to the public. So this is just kind of a case study of an example of, you know, we use this to kind of educate folks on the Clean Water Project itself. If you move on to the next one, I can follow up. So again, the criteria for what made the campaign successful is having a lot of different avenues to get the information out. So Julie started earlier, you know, from the beginning, the information is in the bill inserts. A lot of people say, yeah, I get a bill, I don't read it, or you just throw it out or pay it. I don't believe that. A lot of people read the bill inserts, and we put a lot of time and effort into making sure that information, useful information for our customers, is in there. The second portion of it was using local media to cover the fact that we had these videos. We got great coverage from multiple local reporters and online news sites, just, you know, helping us get the word out that these videos even exist. They're obviously available on the website. We also have a separate website outside of the regular MDC website for the Clean Water Project where we made this information available. And really the short videos, minute or two tops, are tailor-made for social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. So it's easier for people to watch it on their phone a couple minutes than maybe, as I said earlier, reading something or listening to a presentation. It's easier to kind of get it out there in a short video clip. In addition, the MDC has its own video YouTube channel, and we obviously shared it on that, but we actually partnered with our member towns who have their own YouTube channels, and sent it out to them, and they were happy to play it to help get the word out to our customers who are, you know, their citizens. As kind of mentioned, these videos we played a couple times every time we had a new one here or there at district board meetings to kind of maybe lead off the meeting. Same thing when we went out again to talk to about the integrated plan, clean water project, or just a kind of the annual budget presentations that our staff does. We just led off town council meetings and were saying, hey, look, we were here last time. You said that, you know, these presentations were a little complicated. We've made these videos for you now to kind of like, you know, make it a little easier to digest. So I, you know, from what I saw, it was very, folks were receptive, especially our council members were glad to see it and glad to be able to access it in many different ways. And I'll just buzz through quickly here. You know, we also sent the videos out to all of our member town community access stations who played them on, you know, on their network and posted them on their website as well. Some of you may remember we also, the MDC staff did a presentation to the legislature late 2019 on our rates where we played all these videos at the beginning. The video was recorded by CTN, broadcast on the legislature's website for everyone to see. In addition, we made the videos available as part of a link that you could click on digital ads for the Hartford Current and other online news sites. And we could make that, like, have the most impact for our customers by targeting Hartford Current website for specifically in the area of our 8 member towns, since they're the ones paying for the Clean Water Project. And the next slide, please, John, you can skip because it's just an example of one of the videos. We've played those at board meetings, and they're always available on our website and social media right now. So just quickly to wrap up just this section on like why we take this kind of effort into getting the word out, and you can't leave any stone unturned. Like, 5 years ago, there was less ways to get information. Social media didn't exist when clean water really started in mid-2000s. So we have all these different ways to do it now. Just quickly, a couple of additional examples here, and I can wrap it up for you, is that, you know, our monthly CEO reports that are sent out to our towns can, you know, typically 30-plus pages, have a ton of information, not just on what happened that month, but there's usually a historical context with each topic so you can see how it's changed since the last month. And, you know, I mentioned the community access TV. You know, prior to COVID, we had West Hartford Community TV tape our board meetings and give them to us to upload to our website, social media. They'd play it themselves, and then we sent it out to all the other community access towns. It was a successful way to get the board meetings out to the public for people that couldn't be here in public, and no other water company in Connecticut does that. I can tell you that. And just to a little bit more, our CEO typically sends out emails, especially that have to do with state funding for the Clean Water Project, integrated plan, anything to do with DEEP, you know, includes the state legislators, town councils, and, you know, chief elected officials, town managers of each town. And really, I just, the last thing, it's not really up on the slide, but as part of the compliance, the significant compliance for the Clean Water Project, we have to submit a long-term, they call it a long-term control plan. It's basically what your roadmap is for the next 5 years or so of the Clean Water Project. So, you know, when you do that and when we submit that to our regulator, DEEP, you know, not only are we giving them their plan, we also have to document how we're getting this information out to the public. It's not just what you can do. You have to document. If we went to 7 different town councils, then we put in there, and each of these dates is when we went to town Y and went to town X the next week. And if you put an ad in the paper, anything, we document all that. It's part of what we submit so people can see who we reached out to and how. So that's pretty much all I have to say on the communications aspect of the Clean Water Project.
Thank you, Nick. Scott?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Scott Chilton. The next, thank you, Julian. Great job, both of you. So the next topic is really wasn't specifically talked about except for the transparency piece. But Mr. Silverstone has sent recent emails to Chris Stone and John Merle, and basically raising concerns that our procedures and policies don't identify how the clean water surcharge is calculated, and basically indicating that the board is not aware of how it's calculated